I'm John Lewis, and you're listening to 360 Degree City, a podcast where we talk to all kinds of folks that are making life in cities better. Our hope is at the end of each episode, you'll start to see your own city from a slightly different angle. Across the world, a surprising amount of food doesn't get eaten. Roughly one-third of food is lost or wasted every year worldwide. And in Canada, approximately 40% of the food produced in the country is lost or wasted. And the cost of this waste is estimated to be $31 billion every year. So while much food is going to waste, many people are experiencing food insecurity. One in eight Canadian households are food insecure, which amounts to over 4 million Canadians, including over a million children. Lacking access to good food has a variety of negative physical, mental, and social health impacts. In recent years, the idea of food deserts has entered the discussion about food and cities. Food deserts are areas where there is little or no access to affordable, nutritious food. Often in these areas, the only local food options are fast food chains or corner stores. So we wanted to talk to someone who's helping relieve some of the food waste and food security problems that our cities face.
My name is Lourdes Wan.
Today's guest is an urban planner with an entrepreneurial spirit, and she's helping provide good food to those in need. Let's dive in.
I am a Calgary-based business owner, entrepreneur. I have two nonprofit organizations and two businesses. So I am the founder of the Leftovers Foundation, the co-founder of the Moonlight Market Foundation. I'm an urban planner with my company Hive Developments, and I have a spa called Soma Hammam and Spa that operates in the Marriott Hotel in Seton.
Great. Just a few things.
Just a few things. Nothing crazy.
Okay. So, I'd like to dig in today about the Leftovers Foundation and talk a bit about food security. So can you maybe give us the story about how the Leftovers Foundation came about?
Yeah, for sure. So it was back in 2012. So both of my businesses were a couple years old. And my cousin had asked me to just pick up some bread at a Cobb's Bakery. At 9 o'clock at night, they didn't have room in his car and he needed another vehicle. So I said I would come. And Cobb's Bread is this really kind of cool company that gives away all of its day-old bread. So they don't sell day-old bread, but instead of throwing it out, they try to align charities to come pick it up. So when we went there, I was thinking that there would be, I don't know, like a couple bags of bread. And it turned out to be 150 to 200 pounds of bread, which basically fills up the back of a pickup truck. So we loaded it into the vehicles, and he took part of it to his church, and I had no idea where to bring the rest. I sort of knew of this place called the Drop-In Center, and I thought, well, maybe I could bring it there. So we pulled up into the loading dock, and the staff at the DI are really lovely and gracious, and he said, thanks for the donation. This is going to be gone by, you know, noon tomorrow, because they serve 3,000 meals a day. And I think just hearing that and then seeing the sheer amount of food that, you know, would have gone to waste if we weren't there to pick it up, it really was an eye-opener. And so that night, the gear started, you know, turning in my head, and I thought, well, I wonder how many other bakeries waste food, and I wonder, you know, how many other agencies could use the food, because if it's baked the same morning, in my household, we'll keep bread for, you know, a week and a half. So we know the food's not bad. And so I made some phone calls the next day just to people that I knew had businesses, and started picking up from their businesses. I started calling, you know, the Women's Emergency Shelter, the Women's Center, and just people that we could work with. And then, you know, months later, years later, I find myself now still going to pick up a tea or a coffee at Starbucks and asking what they do with their leftovers.
Right.
So it's grown quite a bit. I think we pick up about 4,000 pounds of food a week now and redirect it. So it doesn't go into the landfill, and then it goes directly to agencies and their kitchens that could use it.
Wow. So 4,000 pounds of food a week. So can you give us an explanation, kind of put that in perspective, what that means in terms of the amount of meals that could provide?
For sure. So I think last year that meant 190,000 meals. Wow. And the year before that, it was 158,000. So the more we onboard vendors and volunteers and agencies, just the bigger the redirection part of the organization gets.
Right. So can you maybe describe the journey that a donated food item would go through? From end of day at the bakery or what have you to it being provided to someone in need?
Sure. So I'll give you a sort of a real life example. So our volunteers pick up from the Lazy Loaf and Kettle, which is on Memorial Drive. They're a great little sort of kitschy bakery. We've been picking up from them, I would say, for the last 4 years at least. So they were one of our first vendors that we onboarded. And they just got it. They just understood, you know, they sell the day olds. Why not donate it? So we pick up from them 3 to 4 times a week. So our volunteers will kind of pull up to the loading dock. They'll load the bread into the vehicle. And on Wednesdays, I believe, it goes to Cornerstone Youth. And Cornerstone Youth is in Mayland Heights, and it's a great little organization that has breakfast programs, after lunch programs, and they help outreach into the community. The bread gets made into their grilled cheese sandwich program on Wednesdays. So, you know, 4 bags of bread, which is about 100, 120 pounds, that'll get used up by all the kids that look for food after school and get to have a grilled cheese sandwich.
Okay, terrific. So the volunteers are obviously integral. How many volunteers do you have?
So between Calgary and Edmonton, we have about 300 per year. So that's drivers, and that doesn't include, you know, my large and growing executive team that support what we do every day and our board. But on the driver side is where the majority of the volunteers come in, and they just drive from A to B. We've also onboarded Uber, which is really great. Comes in with drivers, so you can actually on routes that are, you know, Uber specified, you can call an Uber. It'll pick you up from your office or from your home, pick up the food with you, take it to the service agency, and drive you back to your home or office. And that entire ride is covered by Uber, so you don't have to necessarily have a car to volunteer. So if we sort of loop in all of our Uber driver volunteers, it's a pretty big community that's come together behind the project.
Amazing. You know, oftentimes when something like this is such a common sense thing, but it hasn't been addressed, and you've obviously addressed the need. Have you seen any regulatory hiccups and things? You know, when you talk about food, there's health restrictions and those kinds of things. Did you have to navigate any of those?
Of course, yeah. I think I've had my run-ins with AHS. You know, for the most part, AHS has been, you know, really supportive. So they understand the idea and what we're doing, and they want to support it, but they have to work within their framework. And so, you know, when I first started, they were not my first phone call. They were not my second or third or fourth phone call either. Because I just wanted to get the job done, and I knew that we were doing it safely. And then when I started to onboard volunteers who had more of a detailed mindset, they said, well, we should probably try to call AHS. So we have had a few run-ins, especially, you know, with some of the perishable items that we pick up. 90% of what we do is perishable. Right. So we just have to make sure that our processes are in line with what AHS, you know, regulates. It helps that we were donated a refrigerated truck.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years ago. Okay. And so that takes care of a lot of our larger loads where we're, you know, transporting things like eggs and things that are a little bit more higher risk. In the volunteer vehicles, you're looking at sort of bread and fresh produce. So it's like, you know, you're driving groceries home from Sunnyside Market to your house.
Right. Okay. That reminds me of an earlier episode we had. We were chatting with some folks from New Orleans, and they're a youth empowerment group called Youth Rebuilding New Orleans. And I asked them about, you know, some of those regulatory restrictions and insurance and things. And Prince, the executive director, just sort of pulled a line from Nike, and he said, well, we just do it.
That's exactly right. And that was sort of my mindset, and that sort of still is my mindset. And I actually, as the executive director, brought on someone who specifically just handles AHS, because I know that I'm not going to think about it, but she certainly does. And she's been really good kind of coordinating everything for me so that it gets done within guidelines.
Sure.
But it's not something that I think of right
away.
Yeah,
get going, build some momentum, and then
yeah,
make sure
ask
you're...
ask forgiveness later, right?
Yeah,
is
there
that
you
how
go.
That works?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's the key. Okay, so you just also launched the Community Mobile Market. Can you explain a bit about what that's about?
Yeah, so that's a fun little project. And so back in 2014, so we'd been redirecting for about 2 years, and I was just kind of looking at other examples of what other cities were doing. We know, especially on the redirection side, that we are not solving food security. That has nothing to do with that redirection piece. And in some ways, the community mobile market doesn't either, but I think it's a step closer to where we need to be. The community mobile market, basically we purchase, so we've made relationships with our vendors. Mm-hmm. And so we put a call out to vendors and we said, you know, we want to take our truck, we want to make it a community piece. And we want to take it right into communities that are either food deserts, have mobility issues. You know, there's not a lot of equitable and fair access to good, healthy food within some of these areas of the city. So how can we do that? So the vendors came in and said, well, we'll sell you, you know, produce for wholesale. So we've made relationships just on the redirection side with, you know, farmers outlets and Loblaws. And so they sell us the product at wholesale, and then we stuff the truck every Tuesday and bring it into community. And then the community purchases it for a little bit above wholesale, which sort of pays for the food and then the next round of purchases. The best part about, I think, the community mobile market is that we've partnered with the City of Calgary, and their affordable housing team and their community social work team, they have sort of been our in with community. They understand what the community wants, what they need, what food is culturally appropriate. And so we were able to partner with them and make this thing sort of come to life.
Okay, so they were kind of the early guides or translators for specific needs in specific communities.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. So they went to their clients in community and said, you know, if there was a truck that, you know, a food truck basically that came and pulled up right next to your unit, would you come out and get some food?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, let's do it. I'm looking for these types of items. And so those are the items that we source from our vendors. So we're not, you know, picking at random. We know what the community wants, and it's different for each community. Right now we're in Pine Ridge, downtown Bridgeland and Shaganapi, and there's a wide range of, you know, fruits and vegetables that are culturally appropriate for those areas and serve the needs of that community.
Mm-hmm. And so in a community like Calgary, where seasons change dramatically, does it stay the same? Does it look different in the wintertime? What are your plans for the cold months?
Oh, I'm not sure.
That's months away.
Yeah, that's months away. I can think about that in December. Yeah, I mean, we'd like to run the truck year round. We did get some grant funding from the City of Calgary, and we're looking at, you know, applying for more grants to keep the truck going. The truck is a one-ton cubic truck. Our volunteers are, you know, a lot of them are from Calgary, so they're used to the winter. I like the cold weather. I'm one of those weird people that don't like to be too hot. So I, you know, we want to be out there in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. The thing is that, you know, healthy, affordable produce doesn't, you know, these issues of households not having enough to eat or households not being able to access food, those don't stop in the wintertime.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
We'd like to keep our programming going, especially when Calgary gets 9 months of winter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. So for you specifically, how does your urbanism background, how did that inform your approach to creating the Leftovers Foundation and or... the implementing over the number of years?
You know, I think as, I have to say urban planning consultant, because I'm not yet have my RPP designation.
RPP stands for Registered Professional Planner, which is the professional certification for planners here in Alberta, Canada.
I have to say urban planning consultant because I'm not yet have my RPP designation, but I am working on it. Planners out there, you should get it 10 years later. So I think that, you know, urban planners in general, at least for me, we have a very systems approach as our way of thinking. So I think that systems approach has really informed how I run the Leftovers Foundation. Mm. You know, it started with a global problem. We have $31 billion of food that we waste just in Canada alone. And that doesn't account for institutional waste, so hospitals, jails, schools. Mm-hmm. And when you really look at that number, I've read, you know, reports that says that's $100 billion a year, which is, you know, pretty crazy to think, because on the other hand, we have communities that can't feed themselves.
Right.
We have food deserts in the city. And I think, you know, coming from a systems way of thinking, you know, how do we take sort of these challenges, these global challenges and these global challenges and start thinking about them holistically, like urban planners do? Mm-hmm. And then how do we apply, you know, policies, operations, and community behind it so we can start to chip away and solve these issues.
Mm-hmm. And so the Leftovers Foundation, you know, that responds to immediate need, you know, like the day of something that otherwise would be in the landfill, and then within the week that is in the bellies of Calgarians. those are, you know, could be looked from a systems perspective. Those are kind of just treating symptoms kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So yep. what are some of the things that you think cities in general can do to be more proactive to address food security issues?
Well, so I have read, and we do work, we have worked with the School of Public Policy to really look at food security, and to relieve food security, or to sort of increase food security, pardon me, you need more income into your household. That is the bottom line to mm-hmm. help change, to help game change anything, mm-hmm. is that households need more income. Things like the redirection, and we only redirect to service agencies. And the reason why we do that is because service agencies work so hard on their programming, and that's where their dollars should go. It right. shouldn't go to, you know, spending a ton of money on food, especially when we can help alleviate a small part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The community mobile market, because we, you know, the idea behind it is to really empower community so that they can participate in their basic human needs, so that they can participate in what their household needs. So if we have to, you know, we want to come in and say, we're going to sell you, you know, the food for X amount of dollars. You don't have to drive 45 minutes to get to a Walmart to purchase mm-hmm. your food. We're going to bring it right to you, and we're going to bring it to you basically at cost. And I think if we're doing that, we're sort of alleviating the budgets of these households so that they're, you know, empowered to participate mm-hmm. in what they need.
Great. And are there, you mentioned looking at other cities, are there other city programs, initiatives that have been particularly inspiring for you?
Yeah, so when we looked at this, there is, you know, this really cool program. I think it's in Ottawa or Halifax, but they have turned old school buses into food trucks where people can walk onto the bus, and it's a, you know, there's groceries on either side, and they walk through, pick their groceries, and exit through the back. So have this really cool, you know, recycling of old, you know, transit furniture.
Yeah.
And then you get to have it as a really great community piece. And mm-hmm. so we looked at ideas like that. And we certainly, you know, the City of Calgary social worker that we've been working with, Jessica, she interviewed, you know, a lot of the other programs that were happening in other cities.
Mm.
And, you know, what worked, what didn't work, and how we can, you know, replicate this and make sure that we have a model that works for Calgarians.
Great. Yeah, I think that's one of the really interesting things about food when you're thinking about sort of urban living, is that it's really truly one of the things that can bring everybody together. Yes. And so the what that enables, I think, is a whole other level of creativity that you don't see in other aspects, whether that's into community gardening initiatives or the bus or the mobile market or things like that, that can actually help put a very diverse population on the same page. Is pretty yeah, unique opportunity.
Absolutely. And you know, the mobile market is open to everyone. There's no qualifying questions. We don't ask you, you know, what part of the neighborhood you're from. We just want people to come together and connect around food. Mm-hmm. And as Teresa Goldstein from the city affordable housing team would say, you know, food is that connector. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you think about, you know, having a meal with somebody and the conversation and the stories that come out of that, well, that's, you know, sort of the same thing when we're having a market and you have people from all walks of life come through and get to purchase and get to participate in this community need.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Okay, so one last question I have for you that we ask all our guests. Can you name a city that you love and why?
There's so many. That's this is, not this, a fair question this, this to makes, ask an urban planner.
This makes everybody angry, just so you know. See?
Yes, I heard Jyoti's response.
Everybody cheats usually and adds multiple.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two.
All right.
Actually, I was going to give you one, but then you reminded me that New Orleans is such a cool place. I was there for Christmas last year.
Wow.
I love cities with character, and I think New Orleans really fits that bill. But I also really love Portland. And I know it's super basic to say that a planner loves Portland, but it's such a great city. It has a lot of character. You know, I feel like businesses thrive there, especially the food scene. I like to get out and walk and eat and experience streets. And they have so many great streets that have a lot of history and that have a lot of personality. And it's just a city that does weird so well. And I like that a lot.
That's a great motto. Weird so well. Does weird so well. Awesome. The Leftovers Foundation has made incredible strides over the past few years. I'm excited to see how the organization continues to bring good food to communities. I love the system thinking approach and get it done attitude that Lourdes brings to addressing food security. If this interview inspired you to help relieve some urban food issues, and if you live in Calgary or Edmonton, you can sign up to volunteer for the Leftovers Foundation. The volunteer page is in our show notes. 360 Degree City is created by the team at Intelligent Futures. To learn more about the work we do, you can go to intelligentfutures.ca. The music in this episode and in all our episodes is by Sound of Picture. If you like the podcast, please share it with someone that might be interested in seeing their own city from a different angle. We would love it if you subscribed and reviewed the podcast and would love to hear your feedback. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics that you'd like us to cover, get in touch with us on our website or any of our social accounts. I'm John Lewis. Thanks for stopping by.